Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
How do we feed the hungry people of the world? Let's go in depth with Mathura Swaminathan, an economic development expert at the Indian Statistical Institute. So, Professor, you're in Pella today to give a lecture. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am from India, from South India. My name is Mathura Swaminathan, and I'm trained as an economist, and my area of interest is development economics. So applying economics to the problems of developing countries. And I work at an institute called the Indian Statistical Institute, which is based in Bengaluru.
And I have to point out that your father was the very first World Food Prize recipient.
That's right. His name is M.S. Swaminathan. Because Swaminathan is not a surname, it's a given name in India. We have naming differently, the way we use names. And he is a geneticist, a crop breeder, then went on to many other roles in policy. But in the 1960s, he worked in Delhi, Indian Indian Agricultural Research Institute, and he worked with Norman Bullock, who was then at CIMIT in Mexico, to introduce these semi-dwarf varieties of wheat, which led to more than doubling of yields and doubling of production within a few years, what we call today the grain revolution in India. So he was, there were, of course, many scientists, many field workers who were responsible for the achievement, but he was leading the team there and became a very good friend of Norman Borlaug and was the first World Food Prize awardee in 1987.
And so he was the Norman, and I'm hoping our listeners know who Norman Borlaug was, the Iowan who helped usher in with people like your father the Green Revolution. And your father was the equivalent in India.
Yes, you could say that. Yes, yes.
And he did a lot of work with rice, am I remembering right?
He started, in fact, his PhD work was in potatoes, and he came for a postdoc to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. He was working on potatoes then. But then he went back to India, he started on rice, and then he worked on wheat. So wheat is the main crop that he worked on.
All right, and with remarkable outcomes.
That's right.
Okay, so, and you work in economics and statistics and trying to help the world, especially India, feed itself. Is that it in its simplest form?
Yes, my area of interest has been and is food security, or ensuring food security. Because India is a country of tremendous extremes. Many of your listeners may only know India as a country that has sent somebody to the moon or is sending all these IT workers to work in the US and elsewhere, is a big manufacturing hub. But it's also a country with very high levels of poverty and food insecurity. There are hundreds of millions of people, even today, and I say hundreds of millions, the estimates vary depending on the definition, the data, and how you define hunger and poverty, but there are hundreds of millions who are still malnourished, who are still not getting enough food.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about feeding the hungry people of the world with Mathura Swaminathan, an economic development expert at the Indian Statistical Institute. And the politics of this is not working, is it? I mean, all the leaders of the world, they're not getting behind the efforts to help solve the problem, let researchers and people like you solve the problems. They're sort of, I guess I'm frustrated with it, that it doesn't seem that politicians are helping. Am I misreading it?
No, I think on the whole, you're right. There have been changes in policy in India. So I don't want to sound like the last 30 years or 40 years after the Green Revolution, there's been no progress. In fact, the paradox in India is that we have increased our production multifold. We were producing about 10 million tons of wheat in 1960s. We're now producing over 100 million tons. We produce over 100 million tons of rice. We're the world's biggest exporter of rice. You know, we're the world's largest producer of many commodities. But it's not getting to all the people. And I think this is, it is a problem of policy. It's a problem of addressing access to food, because ultimately that depends on your entitlements. It depends on your income. There's food in the store, but can you afford to buy it? And I agree with you that the agricultural scientists did their job. They worked on the production side. But the social scientists and the policy makers who have to ensure that every person in a rural area, in a remote area, anywhere in India, gets access to that food, those policies haven't worked, and we haven't seen the kind of commitment that we should have to this problem.
Well, and it seems like there's such income inequality that more and more, I'm just going to put it simple, you're the economist, but more and more money gets sucked up the system to the economic elites, and the people at the bottom are sort of left in the cold. And we value, so much of the world values capitalism so much, there's not, and people are going to be angry at me for saying this, but there's difficulties if you're at the bottom, and that there's systemic forces that are in the way. Am I right?
Absolutely, I agree with you. I think that, you know, India started after independence in 1947. Our constitution says we are a socialist republic. And the idea there was, it was a unique form of socialism because we are a democracy with largest democracy in the world, but that the public sector and the government would have a very major role to play because of the state of underdevelopment, because of the problems like food insecurity or famine which we had before independence. So I think in many countries, including India, the state has to continue to play this role in a very big way. And as elsewhere in the world, during the last 2 years of the pandemic, the number of billionaires in India went up. I mean, those who are working for the big IT companies or they were making more and more, you know, online retail. Everybody was buying things online. So there is a section which is getting richer, and the large, vast number of people who lost their jobs. And in rural areas, in agriculture, a feature of India is that about 85% of our producers have less than 1 hectare of land. I don't even know if you can visualize what 1 hectare is. It's very small for a farm in the US. So we have so many million people. 70% of our population is still rural. And given the land's mass that we have, yes, we have inequality, but there's also a problem in the rural areas, which is not just inequality, but that the vast majority are what we call smallholders and can't produce and do not generate enough income from what they produce. And we see this, that even the farming families are going hungry. which is something unusual. You would think that they would be at least able to feed themselves, not just the workers, not just the those who work on others' farms, the field labor, but also the small farmers.
Oh, in 1963 or four, the great American anthropologist Margaret Mead wrote, and this was a long time ago, but I think this is provocative. She said that even then there were so many hungry people in the world, and she pointed to the hungry people in the United States. And she said, part of the problem is that we have a Department of Agriculture, which is all about agriculture and production and all the things that go with that, when we really need a separate Department of Food. And the Department of Food would be responsible for making sure that people had enough to eat. Do you think that's part of the problem? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Absolutely, it is, because in the last few years, there's been increasing attention in India and worldwide to nutrition. Because when we talk about hunger, sometimes a family may get adequate calories, but if it's all rice or potatoes, then you're not getting all your vitamins and your minerals and your proteins. So it's not just the quantity, but the quality of food, of having a healthy diet. And when programs on nutrition started, they realized that when you're talking about the final outcome in a human being, are they well nourished? It's not just the agriculture ministry, but it's health. Do you have clean drinking water? Do you have fuel for cooking? Some families don't have fuel throughout the year. So they have started something called a nutrition mission, but I think it's exactly this, that ultimately nutrition depends on many things, not just food production. And I think that's one of the reasons definitely that we've not been able to overcome this problem, because different departments or different ministries or different arms of government are doing slightly different things and not coordinated in their work.
More in depth after this. Continued my conversation about feeding the hungry people of the world with Mathura Swaminathan, an economic development expert at the Indian Statistical Institute. But let's just say, let's wipe the slate clean. What systems would you put in place that work better than the systems we have now? And let's just not talk about India. Let's just think about the world. And let's just say that we're starting over a blank slate. Big challenge. Do you want to tackle that?
Oh my gosh, that's very big. But I think more and more that addressing inequality directly is the issue. There are people, you know, who have five houses or houses in five countries, and there are people who are homeless. So whether it's land, whether it's housing, whether it's education, we have extreme inequalities. And I think till we ensure that every family has, you know, what in economics we call an endowment, because when you enter in a capitalist economy, when you enter the market, what you can get depends on what you have to give. Now, if you don't have skills which are bringing you a $100,000 salary, you're not going to get that. So I think if I were to look at it, some of the countries of Europe, Western Europe, after World War II, and this includes England, they set up massive school education programs, which were quality education for everybody. You didn't have to be rich and have to go to a private school to get a good education. They set up things like the National Health Service in the UK. Again, it doesn't matter what your income is, everybody gets the same health care and it's free. So I think that led to a kind of social mobility, that your father or mother may have been a butcher or may have been a seamstress or may have been a mine worker, but you could be a diplomat. So it doesn't, you have all opportunities. If you want to become a high quality butcher, you can do that too. So I think that some basic redistribution of assets in each country, I mean, and globally, because some countries of the world have much more than they need and others don't. So I think unless you have this redistribution of resources, and in the case of inter-country, I think it's finance. I mean, it's not easy to take land from the US and give it to an Indian farmer, but you can distribute funds. And I would say this has become even more critical now with climate change, because some countries of the world, many countries of the world, India included, we have still not ensured enough electricity for every home. So we have still not ensured some of the basic human needs. And how can we cut back on our energy production? How can we say, oh, we know we are in the part of the, you know, we are going to be recipients of the effects of climate change. We have to deal with it. But how can you ask us to cut down consumption or cut down energy use? Because we still have to reach, you know, adequate consumption, adequate energy to many people. So I think, I mean, I it's very difficult to think of inter-country redistribution of resources, because, you know, there's whatever the clean slate, there's politics and so on. But I think at least within a country, we have to make efforts that minimum food, health, and education, because I think then you are at least starting on some kind of level playing field. It's still not level, but it's an attempt to level the playing field.
Thanks to Mathura Swaminathan for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.